It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A few weeks ago, we talked about the possibility of a rainbow wave with more than 400 LGBT plus candidates running for office across America. Now that the midterm election is over, we could ask the question, did we see a rainbow wave? Do you think there was a rainbow wave in this election? Do you care how your representatives identify themselves? How important do you think diverse representation is in the legislature or in Congress? Are you motivated to vote for a candidate based on their identity, whatever it may be? And what do you think of the fact that our incoming legislators are the most diverse class ever? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Daniel Bartholomew is a senior graduate student lecturer in the Department of Sociology and LGBT plus Studies at UW-Milwaukee. Daniel, welcome back to the Morning Show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
We spoke a little before the election about the fact that more than 400 LGBT plus candidates were on ballots all over the country this election. So did we see a rainbow wave?
Again, I would stick to what I said last time in saying that I think calling this a rainbow wave was a bit of an overstatement from the start. To put things into perspective, so there were 430 openly identified LGBT plus folks running for office in the midterm elections. And according to the Victory Institute, which is a national organization that keeps track of all openly identified LGBT plus elected officials in the U.S., 160 out of the 430 won their races. So that's a little over 33%, a little over a third won those races. But even with adding those into the previously openly identified LGBT plus elected officials throughout all levels of U.S. government, the LGBT plus community still remains significantly underrepresented in terms of their overall representation. So suggesting that there was a rainbow wave, I think, implies a bit more strongly what is really happening in politics today.
Let's talk specifically about Congress. How many LGBT plus candidates did we elect, and what percentage of Congress do they now occupy?
So after the midterm elections, we will now be up to 10 openly identified LGBT plus people in Congress. So out of the 435 congressional seats, that ends up being a little more than 2%. So according to the most recent national estimates, it's estimated that about 4.5% of the U.S. population identifies as part of the LGBT plus community. And that number has continued to grow since national polling places have been collecting this data. So we're still only about halfway there in terms of representation in Congress. But if we expand that out to all levels of government throughout the United States, the overall percentage of representation is much lower than that.
And so let's talk about state and local races. How did LGBT plus candidates do there?
So in Wisconsin, we have two of the 10 U.S. Congress positions are actually being of openly identified LGBT plus people come from Wisconsin. So Senator Tammy Baldwin and U.S. Representative Mark Pocan are both in Congress. A few of the other kind of significant LGBT plus races that happened throughout the U.S. was Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona won a kind of drawn out and very close battle to win a seat in the Senate, and she will be the first ever openly identified bisexual woman to serve in the U.S. Senate. Also, another significant race came out of Kansas, where Sharice Davis was the first openly identified LGBT plus individual to win a seat in Congress from that state. And Sharice Davis also made history as being the first Native American woman to be elected into Congress, along with New Mexico's Deb Haaland. A few other significant races, Angie Craig from Minnesota will become the first lesbian mother to ever be elected into Congress. And in terms of the governor races, Jared Polis of Colorado became the first gay man to be elected governor.
Being the first of anything is a position that can come with some pressure. Do you think these candidates will be affected by that or feel the need to work harder or be more active or be more visible on LGBT plus issues?
think that's what the people who voted them into office are hoping for. I think we're currently in a political climate where a lot of people, not just LGBT plus people, but heterosexual identified people too, are feeling dissatisfied or discouraged with the way our government is being run. And so this election cycle, these dissatisfied citizens wanted to get people into office who they truly believe are going to bring about some significant changes. And for better or for worse, the LGBT plus community in the U.S. is associated with radicalism and revolution and social reform. I mean, for instance, it was the mobilization and the grassroots efforts of the LGBT plus community that led to the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and to the legalization of same-gender marriage. So even with the odds stacked against them, the LGBT plus community has had a pretty impressive track record of bringing about social and legal reformations in the U.S. So for a lot of people who want to see some significant changes in government, LGBT plus people running for office are attractive candidates for that reason.
What do you think about the fact that the incoming class of legislators in Congress is the most diverse yet?
I think it says a lot, again, about kind of the culture of the U.S. today. People who are from underrepresented communities, marginalized communities, want to see people who look like them and who share their identities being elected into office so they can have a seat at the table during these important policy decisions. So I think that the increasingly diversified Congress is a trend that we can expect to see continue to intensify in the future.
Are we talking about generational change here?
Absolutely. I mean, we don't have a lot of data in yet, but I think we can anticipate that younger generations are going to become more and more common at the polls in future generations. A lot of the individuals who are running for offices this time particularly targeted their campaigns to motivate younger generations to get out and to vote because they know that that's been a demographic that's been significantly underrepresented at the polls in the past. For example, candidate Beto O'Rourke from Texas, who was running for Senate, didn't win his election, but definitely made some significant gains at getting younger generations to get out to the polls. And I think, again, that's something that people running for office are going to be focusing on in the future, too.
Do diverse candidates campaign heavily on their identity, or is that just one factor about them that really is beside the point?
That's definitely a subjective approach, I would say, but I'd say by and large, it's never just a single issue battle for an individual running into elected office. LGBT plus folks have to deal with the same societal concerns that all other people do as well. You know, their identity in terms of their gender and sexuality is one aspect of who they are, and certainly it does affect the way that they're able to access certain pathways to, access certain privileges or be denied certain privileges in society, but they still have to deal with everyday human issues that all U.S. citizens have to deal with. And so I would say that LGBT plus people running for office are not just focused on issues that are pertaining to their gender and sexual identity.
What would be one policy issue that you would hope gets addressed by the next Congress?
Well, in terms of the LGBT plus community, there's many that still need to be addressed. In a number of states, it's still legal for employers to discriminate against people based off of their gender and sexual identities. There's also a number of states that do not currently recognize hate crimes that are based on gender identity. And another significant issue is that in many states, in order for a transgender person to change their gender identity on their birth certificate, states require that individual surgically modifies their genitalia.
Daniel, we'll have to leave it there. We're out of town. Daniel Bartholomew, sure. Thank you for joining us this morning. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.